through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome into Tom, Jake, and Stacy. Great show planned for you today on this Friday. Going to look ahead to the NFC and AFC championship games. Got Mike Salk coming up in about a half an hour. We'll talk to Michael Bumpus as we do every Friday coming up at 2 o'clock. Of course, yet another development in the Houston Astros sign-stealing scandal, saga, however you want to describe it. But I got to say, about these NFC and AFC championship games, guys, this is the round that makes me the most upset to watch.
Why?
Because I feel like my team should have been in it.
Mm. Okay.
You know, like if my team gets beat in the wild card round, I feel like, you know what? They kind of made the playoffs, beat in the wild card round. They were a five seed. I don't know how far they were going to go anyway. But when you get beat in the divisional round, you start replaying all those scenes from the game in your head, and you're watching these games, AFC, NFC. You're like, oh, man, we could have defended that pass. Or,
do you think it would hurt more to get this far and not make it? Because one of my favorite things about this round, regardless of whether or not the Seahawks are in it, is no one has lost the Super Bowl. So they're just excited to – you have two teams just – excited to be going there. You have guys crying on the field. So I like seeing that just because it's like it's the excitement before anyone has to lose.
I love watching it. Don't get me wrong. Like that scenario you just went through, I love watching that too.
Right.
That's really towards the end of it though. I'm talking about when the game starts, crowds fired up, mm-hmm. You got Buck and Aikman doing their thing. You're just like, man, I should be a part of this, and I'm not.
Yes. And you're so close, right? I mean, I think, you know, for the Seahawks losing in the divisional round, you are so close to getting yourself in a position to be one game away from going to Miami and going to the Super Bowl. And I think that part of it is very hard, especially knowing how that game finished against Green Bay, that you were just one possession away, potentially. That's the way you feel, is that, gosh, if just Russell Wilson could have the ball one more time in his hands, if Malik Turner... if he didn't make that drop on that drive, just what if? What if? What could have happened at that point? And I think that that's the part that will be hard to swallow as you watch that game. But I tell you what, the other thing that I end up doing is I start getting jealous. I start getting jealous of these teams, not just that my team's not there, but what they have and what you don't have, right? Like you look around and you're like, man, that defense is flying around. Or there's this running back in Derrick Henry, and he's just an absolute monster. Mm-hmm. There's this receiver over there.
Accidentally gets to that round. They always have something where you look at it and think, oh, man, imagine that on this team.
Yes.
And we talk so much here about culture, and I think we all drink the Kool-Aid on that. But when you get to a round where your team is out and you look at the Tennessee Titans or whoever it is and you say, wait, there's another system, another culture that may have done it better than we did. Like, how is that possible? I just was drinking this team's Kool-Aid all year for the last, you know, 12 months or whatever it was. And there were not only one, two, three, but four teams mm-hmm. that managed to do it better than we did. How is that possible?
Yeah, it's a great point. And the Tennessee Titans, to me, are a team that you look at and say, man, they overcame the odds. At one point, they were. I think their record was 1-4, 2-4. I can't exactly remember what they were after six games, but they were in a very bad way, leading to them benching their franchise quarterback and their first round pick in Marcus Mariota for Ryan Tannehill, and then they come storming back, and they are a feel good story. They're a team that you talk about belief, you talk about getting hot at the right time. They've really come together in this, you know, during this season. And their toughness is at an all-time high. You got Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid that have this dynamic, explosive offense with playmakers that all, it seems like, run below a 4-4, right? It's those types of things that you start to look around and say, okay, I think this is a reflection in terms of what can the Seahawks do?
Okay, what's worse, though? Think about this. Thinking, oh, we should be here, we could compete with these guys, or watching these four teams thinking, oh, these guys are way better than we were.
You mean what's a worse feeling?
Yeah, what's a worse feeling?
I think
like how far behind. You look at the 49er defense, that's kind of the unit I think we all look at that we would most want for ourselves.
I think Green Bay could have performed to the same standard as Seattle. I think that Seattle would have been a fair replacement for Green Bay, but ultimately you didn't get there. Like, Green Bay beat you. And I think the difference between those two teams, a big part of that was the defensive line. And I know their system is different with a 3-4, but their ends, just, you didn't have that pass rush, and they did.
You're talking about Green Bay or Seattle?
Green Bay.
Yeah.
Green Bay.
If you're going to replace Seattle with, or excuse me, replace one of the teams with Seattle.
Yeah, that's the only team I look and think like, oh man, that could have been Seattle.
What if they just run, rush, or pass, I guess, all over San Francisco? San Francisco, their defense has no answer for Aaron Rodgers,
yeah,
and Devontae Adams in the same way that we had no answer for. That would be shocking.
It'd be shocking because the pass defense has been a strength of that defense.
Yeah.
I mean, they allowed, I don't remember what it was, by week 10, I remember looking, and they were one of the few teams allowing less than 200 yards, and they had only allowed like a handful of touchdowns, passing touchdowns even, I think 10, through 10 weeks.
Oof.
I know. They were a shutdown passing defense.
You know what's disturbing, too, is we were looking at all the remaining cornerbacks. Richard Sherman is the best one.
Yes.
He's the best remaining corner of all these teams. That just irks me. I don't know how you guys feel.
And also the way he finished the year, statistically, he finished once again at the top. And that is coming off of an injury-plagued season, mm-hmm, last year where he did not perform nearly at the same level. But to see him come back a year or, you know, year after playing through that Achilles injury, and to see him playing at the level now, yeah, it hurts a little bit, stings a little bit. And to see, like you were pointing out, to see their 49ers defense, they've got a formula that is very reminiscent of what Seattle built in 12 and through 15. And so it makes you wonder, do the Seahawks need to change? Do the Seahawks need to go against their whole entire philosophy, or do they need to stick with what they've done and continue to try and build and go through that route? I mean, yesterday we entertained and talked about the idea of people talking about fire Pete Carroll, which I think is ridiculous. But you start to look at what is the best move for this team, and is it trying to rebuild that old model? Or is it about trying to build a new model moving forward around the current construction you currently have?
They're not using the old Seahawk formula exactly. They did pay their quarterback, who hadn't proved anything, an ungodly amount of money. The Seahawks didn't do that in 2013.
Correct.
In 2014. You're right on the defensive side. They've drafted a bunch of young guys who they haven't had to pay yet. They'll run into the same problem.
I know,
but
one thing that helped them was being bad for a while during the middle of the Seahawks stretch. The Seahawks haven't had, I mean, you don't get Nick Bosa if you don't have a top three pick.
Right. Eventually they'll have to pay those guys too.
Yeah.
They'll be in the same situation like 2 or 3 years from now that the Seahawks are in right now.
Yeah, but that is one advantage that I think teams like that have over teams that are perpetually good. Is when's the last time Seattle had a pick above 15?
Yeah, Once again, it goes back to our question. Would you rather win a Super Bowl and go down or be kind of good every year?
It makes the hard argument of, you know, can you make these leaps, these roster changes and turnovers without taking dips and then being able to replenish your blue chip talent, right? I think that's kind of one of the questions and the interesting parts about it. Is that the Seahawks, they've been able to get by. They've been able to have great, successful seasons in the grand scheme of entertaining regular seasons, 10-win seasons, playoff type of seasons. But we've talked about this as well, that they haven't had the same blue-chip type of talent that is really, truly capable of them going to the Super Bowl, and everybody's not questioning or wondering how they made it happen, that it's like, oh, no, this roster was built, mm-hmm, to do that.
This raises an interesting question about the NFL system, particularly when it comes to the draft. Do you think that the NFL does enough or anything to reward winning?
To reward winning?
Yeah, they really don't. I mean, we all know that they want parity. They flip the order of the draft.
The advantages you have are in free agency, that a player like Jadeveon Clowney chose not to go to Miami and forced the Texans' hand to go to Seattle. That's one advantage.
But how many players do that?
Yeah, but think of how many players Bill Belichick gets, with players being like, well, I'm getting near the end of my career. I'm still good, but I know that I want to win before I leave.
Maybe one a year. Who's washed up?
I don't know. I'm trying to think.
Are you talking like Junior Seau?
Like no, we're talking like Darrell Revis.
Yes.
Like a Darrell Revis type of player.
Was he a great player for them?
Yeah, he was.
Was he a great player?
That was his last great... He was their last... That was his last great season before he absolutely tanked when he returned to the New York
Jets. He was
Jets.
On the 15th
I do agree that the league is built for parity. It's why only the New England Patriots, through whatever witch magic they've been able to do it, have had 19 consecutive winning seasons. Seattle, though, is the next closest. And they've also had a tough road to do that because when you win a lot, you have lower draft picks. You usually have less capital because you have stars that you have to pay. It is tougher.
See, I feel like they should make an alteration to the draft where you take like...
You want a lotto.
I want the bottom five teams and the top five teams as the top 10 picks. And then you mix it some way because the top 10 picks are like the
players,
right?
But then
players,
what if you're a perpetually mediocre team?
Your fault. Like you're the Dolphins going 7-9 every single year. You need to get out of that somehow.
You need to either be the best or the worst.
Right. You need to like, well, that's kind of what they're finally doing. They finally tanked.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, they'll be picking in the top 10.
Yes. Well, they're picking in the top five.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
So reward the teams that are really good.
And don't reward mediocrity.
No.
Reward tanking.
Yep.
And winning.
Don't reward the teams that are trying, but for whatever reason, look, you know, they're injured.
The squeaky wheel gets the grease.
Exactly.
If you're just rolling along, you get nothing.
I got three questions.
It's time for three questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 12 after 12, Tom Wassel's burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Enough with the "we got to protect the kids" nonsense.
This hour, Tom, Jake, and Stacey, brought to you by Car Toys. First question here. What's the best round of the NFL playoffs? Not the one that you're most jealous of or whatever. What tends to yield the best results?
This is a really good question because there's part of me that loves championship weekend because, like Stacey said, the buildup to it for both teams, you're one game away. The hope is at all-time high for those teams. But I also really, really like wild card and divisional round because you're getting multiple games on Saturday and Sunday. I love that. I think it's so fun having, you know, two games, three games each day on Saturday
and
Sunday.
Fills your whole weekend.
Yeah, it's awesome.
I think I agree. The wild card was my first reaction because I think there's more surprises that happen in that round. You're going to have a six seed, and I know that I'm going to contradict myself when I talk about the Titans, but you're going to have a six seed potentially upset someone in that round, and then, you know, maybe they go on and lose, but it's kind of fun in the moment because you have crazy games and things you weren't expecting. But that being said, maybe it's specifically this round because the Titans are in there. Maybe it's because I like watching the Chiefs. Maybe it becomes an interesting conversation about how far a defensive-led team can get. But I am just so interested in this championship round. And I know Seattle isn't there, but there's something about the level of talent that usually makes it through to this round. And also the feeling on I know that people who lose are sad, but the two teams that make it to the Super Bowl are the happiest they'll be until one of them wins. And then the other one gets heartbreak. But in the moment, the two teams are happy to be going.
It's such a strange thing that making the Super Bowl and losing can be a worse fate
than
losing in the wild card.
But yeah, well, think of the feeling that Seahawks fans had after the NFC Championship game against Green Bay, that win, and then the Super Bowl. And it's like you wanted, I'm sure fans were like, I wish I could have just hung on to the excitement after that win and not gone further.
Next.
Number two.
Kyle Brown, the happiest little kid on the planet last night because his Cougs.
Good job, Kyle.
His Cougs took down number 8 Oregon. I could not believe what I was watching.
Start of a dynasty.
I'm watching
CJ Elby, baby.
I turned that game on at about maybe 7:45 or so because I knew the Cougs or the Huskies were coming on at 8.
Anyone, you've been listening to the Cougs on 7:10, I imagine.
I turned on the game to watch the Huskies.
I did. They were on the same channel.
I came over to talk to your friend.
This is a godforsaken game.
And I'm looking at the little score box at the bottom. It says number 8 Oregon. I think it was 63-58 Cougs. And I'm looking at it, and I'm just saying, no. I'm misunderstanding what I'm looking at right now. This cannot be. A minute 38 to go, and the Cougs are up 5. So once I realized that it was true, I said, there's no way with a minute 38 to go, they're going to hold on to this 5-point lead.
You and me both.
They did.
Yeah. I had a dream this morning that I woke up and looked at my phone, and it was 2 p.m., and I had like 20 missed calls from Kyle because obviously I'm really late for the show. It was a dream.
Way late.
But I imagine that's the feeling you had where you're just kind of blinking really hard and looking at it, thinking, is this right? This is happening, right? I'm not reading this backwards.
It's crazy. I mean, it's awesome that, you know, in college basketball, there's always room for parity, right? And I think that when you look at college basketball, there are strong top talents, don't get me wrong, blue-blooded programs that always dominate. But it just seems to be every single year that you have some of these continued games pop up where you're going to have a top 10 team lose to an unranked team, a team in Washington State that hadn't beat a top 10 team in how long?
I mean, since 2007, right? They beat Arizona in overtime. I stormed the floor at a Friel court.
You were there. So you were there. I mean, that's a deep, dark day in Curtis Rogers' history, but
it's okay,
a great day for Kyle Brown.
Count the banners.
But this is great.
Please,
I mean, can they? The question is, can they build off this? Because the crazy thing is, before this, it wasn't like they were on some tear. They just got blown out by Stanford.
But they beat UCLA.
Amen.
They did
beat
UCLA.
They're 11-6, man. Overall, I mean, come on, cut them a break.
Cut them a break.
Cut them a break.
Hey, Coach Kyle Smith's getting them in order there, Jake.
Nerd Ball is alive and well.
Data Raid.
Alive and well.
That move your needle.
Yeah, it's awesome. I love seeing that stuff.
No, I know you love it when it happens, but will you watch another Coug game?
Maybe. Mm-hmm. Maybe.
That's a lie. That is a lie.
Maybe.
What had happened? Well, the way my leg was.
Yeah, no. I know that the game was on. I just got a phone call, and I couldn't watch it.
Yeah, something came up. I don't know what it was.
Number three.
Had they not beat them last night, there's just no, you wouldn't watch a game like ever.
Ever. But also, you know, I'm kind of busy playing Legos with Jackson.
Okay.
He's really into that these days.
I'm also busy.
I do stuff.
I do stuff too.
How would you guys grade Jermaine Ifedi's tenure here in Seattle?
Jake, you go first.
Okay, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to give him props first. Okay, so the thing is with Jermaine Ifedi is that during his 4 years in Seattle, he played, I think, every game. Is that right? Like, he played every game for the Seahawks. So in terms of his durability, he was there. He was there for the Seahawks. He was dependable in that fashion.
He got better.
And so I think that when you look at his four seasons, first two seasons really struggled. The last two seasons of his career, he got better. And it wasn't significantly better to where I'm conflicted about letting potentially Jermaine Ifedi go. He still continued at the end of his career here in Seattle. I'm assuming that he was false starts, pre-snap penalties. There were some mistakes, but there were bright moments for mm-hmm. Jermaine Ifedi. It'll be interesting to see what happens in the second stage of his career.
Hold on. Grade. Oh, yeah, Tom. Put him on the spot, Tom.
C-.
Okay. Whoop. All right.
I'm going to go controversial. I'm going to give him a B.
Oh, my goodness.
I don't know why I say that, but I just want to be different. Hear me out.
I don't know if
I can we're
hear
talking,
you.
I know. Well, I almost went B-. I would have said C, but we can't have the same grade. So I'm going to do a devil's advocate. The most consistently bad thing about Jermaine Ifedi's tenure wasn't necessarily just his play on the field solely in itself, because he improved in his final 2 years. It was his pre-snap penalties. He led the team in penalties in what, 2018 or 17, one of those years, and I think might have led the team again. He really struggled with false starts. I think that if you take those out, I know you can't, but I think if you take them out and you just look at his play on the field, he is a starting caliber player somewhere. I don't know if Seattle will retain him, but he will get a starting job somewhere. And I think part of it is when you're a first round pick, it's the same thing Rashad Penny runs into. When you're a first round pick, the expectation is so high that if you aren't the best player on that line or the second best player on that line, you're considered a bust. And that's not always fair.
He's one of those guys. By the way, I grade him a B too.
Yeah, Tom.
I will. I absolutely will.
Jake's shaking his head.
You guys are nuts.
You know what, Jake? We don't want to be like you. We're trying to be different and exciting.
You guys are very generous.
I would have, the way his career started off, I would have said D+, C-.
Uh-huh.
And then he slightly improved with when Mike Solari came in here. Look, as a player of the position of right tackle, he's a BB minus guy.
No.
He's not. Come on, Jake.
No.
How is he not?
Because we you're talking about beforehand, his position and his play is a D plus C minus. I would grade it even farther down than that.
An F?
And then he's gotten better. He's gotten better over time, and I wouldn't. And I think that, you know, Jermaine Ifedi, that's to his credit. I think he's continuing to get better as a football
player.
But
you're so concerned for Russell Wilson's his welfare. That's why you're just concerned about him being protected.
Tom's like, look, I don't care about him being
playing offensive
protected.
Line and playing tackle
I know
in
that.
This league.
C's get degrees, Jake. C's get degrees.
So run blocking, I think that run blocking-wise, he is a much better run blocker than he is a pass protector.
Okay, that's fair. But ideally, you'd want a good pass protector as a tackle.
Yes.
He tried, man.
He did.
He definitely tried.
That's what I'm saying. Like, you give him props for the fact. I mean, it's extremely hard to do to stay durable for four seasons, and he was there. He transitioned from tackle to guard back to tackle. I mean, it's just, unfortunately, it was a first-round pick that ended up not working out.
Jake, if you had to guess, I know the answer seems obvious because they didn't do the fifth-year option, but if you had to guess whether or not they re-sign him, what's your guess?
At the right price, they may consider it. I just really think that they're going to move on from Jermaine Ifedi. But look, because he's gonna try and get top of the market. And the thing is you look at this free agent class in terms of tackles, I really think that for him, he's in a really good spot because there's just not that many right tackles in this league. So there are a couple really, really good players at the top. And then after that, the depth just isn't there. So you're going to find a team that's really hurting and wanting to get a right tackle that will be willing to pay what he wants.
We're going to talk to Mike Sauk next. We'll ask him if he has any jealousy in his heart. That's next on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Rost.
And Mike Sauk joins us as he does every single day. We look forward to that, don't we, Mike?
Always.
Yes, we do.
Highlight of my day.
as you always tell us. When you watch the conference championship games this Sunday, do you suspect that there's going to be anything you're jealous of? Like, you're going to look at any one of the teams, you're going to say, I want that on this team.
There's going to be a bunch of things.
Let's go through one by one.
All right, let's see. I'm going to be jealous of the Niners' pass rush. I'm going to be jealous of the Titans' offensive line and their running game. I mean, those are the two that stand out probably more than anything else. It's funny. I know the Packers beat the Seahawks last week. I'm not going to be jealous of that much on their team. I mean, unfortunately, they were the better team that day, and Seahawks were beat up and wounded and everything else. And I think the Packers have had some injuries too. But I guess I'll be jealous of Za'Darius Smith and Preston Smith. I mean, I'd certainly like to have those guys on my team, so I'll be a little jealous there. Maybe, and with Kansas City, they're a really good team, but they're built so fundamentally differently from the Seahawks that I don't think I'm going to watch them and say, oh, if only the Seahawks had a passing attack like that, if only they had some players on the outside. Like I don't find myself thinking that way about this team. I'll be much more jealous of what the Titans do with their offensive line and their running game and a big, powerful back like Derrick Henry. And I'll be jealous of that Niners defensive front and how they get after the quarterback.
What about like a fist-pumping Robert Saleh, your defensive coordinator, that just gets so much of the camera spotlight?
I don't know that I need that necessarily.
Sure.
The spotlight.
I love that.
Do you?
I love that. When they pan to him and he's just all fired up and the veins are coming out
of his neck.
You can
only spend so much time on the flat-brim cap of
It's good to shake it up with a bald head every now and then.
Yeah, once Kyle Shanahan has taken all of the airtime with his flat brim cool cap, you eventually have to show Robert Saleh.
Does that guy just love himself?
Which one,
Kyle Shanahan?
I think so. Yeah, I don't know him.
We saw that clip of him with Mike Pettine. Did you see that at all? Where Mike Pettine's trying to tell him what to do, and then he realizes, like Shanahan stares daggers at him, like, yeah, I got this.
Yeah, thanks.
Like, he's so into his own scheme.
To be fair, though,
I'm a hot young dude.
If Mike Pettine was telling you what to do, you'd probably give him the same look. Like, I don't think Mike Pettine's a great coach.
I don't either, but wasn't he still the superior in that situation?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if he was superior, but he was the superior.
He's the superior.
Yeah, I don't know if he was superior. That was right around the time he started taking shots at Russell Wilson and then got embarrassed.
Right.
So I don't I don't know. Mike Pettine's not my favorite guy in the NFL.
It's a bad mix.
I'm going to take Kyle Shanahan over him.
So out of all those teams, what is the team, and I think I know what the answer is going to be, but what is the team that's going to be playing this weekend that you wish the Seahawks would model themselves after?
Well, I think they already have in a lot of ways. The Seahawks want the Niners defense, and the Seahawks want the Titans offense, but, you know, not with Ryan Tannehill. That's what they want. They are looking for an offensive line and a run game that is akin to what the Titans do, only with the explosive plays coming off of Russell's arm and play action. And then they're looking for a defense that does a lot of what the Niners do, maybe not necessarily scheme-wise, but in terms of the way they pressure opponents, the way they get after the quarterback, the way they, you know, their secondary that's pretty good. I'll tell you, there is one other guy that I will find myself a little jealous of this weekend, and I don't know necessarily it's what the Seahawks need, but I just... That Debo Samuel dude.
Yeah,
I like
49ers.
He's physical. He's mean. He reminds me a little bit of Hines Ward. Not that the body type is different, but just the ability to go out and play physically. I really like him.
Isn't the Titans offense with a much better quarterback potentially just the Saints offense? Like, why not maybe model yourself after that?
It's interesting because I see what you're saying. They're a deep play action pass team, especially now that Drew Brees has gotten older and they've reverted more to a similar style to the Seahawks. The difference is, though, is that Sean Payton does such a great job of mixing personnel and finding the mismatches. He creates mismatches with his personnel. He'll line up his tight end in certain situations outside or with motions that creates these mismatches that you just are drooling over when you watch the film. So, yeah, I think there's that model, and that's where I think if Brian Schottenheimer can continue to keep growing and evolve and keep looking around and get better as a play caller, they can be a top five offense, no question about that. They're already on their way in terms of improving from 18 to 19, getting themselves in the top 10.
Problem you just keep coming back to with the Seahawks is it's the two lines. Their defensive line doesn't do much of anything, and their offensive line, while it's been good the last few years, hasn't been elite. And as you've watched the Titans through the playoffs here in the last couple of games, their offensive line has been elite. Mm-hmm. Seahawks offensive line has been good, at times even very good, especially in the running game. But at any point, have you looked at them and said they were great, they were elite, they were you know, doing what you've seen the Titans do, mauling people the last couple of games? I haven't seen a ton of that.
I think the difference that you look at is the Titans offensive line. They're able to do both, and I think that's the thing that the Seahawks
are multifaceted.
Yes, that's the thing that they've been missing for years, is that they've been able to get decent run blockers, but they've gotten poor pass blockers. And trying to find that combination is really that you know, sweet spot, that bread and butter, where you see the Tennessee Titans, you see the Indianapolis Colts. That's the goal of all offensive lines.
I don't know if you guys heard Jeff Schwartz the other day. I think he was on.
He was on
David
last
Moore.
Night with Bob Dave Moore.
He was great, but he was talking about that. And he said it's harder and harder to find offensive linemen that can both pass block or pass protect and also help you in the run, because there's just fewer and fewer schools that teach their linemen to do that. So it's just something I wonder if Seattle can truly fix in one offseason.
Maybe they can't in one offseason, but if you can get a couple of those guys, I think you're better. I still want the defensive line is such a bigger problem to me, though. I think you can survive with something akin to what you've got on the offensive line. You don't get any pressure on the quarterback, and they ran all over you, and you start going through. Brock was reading me the numbers of what their defense accomplished this year. They didn't accomplish squat. They got run on. They got thrown on. They were at times better in the red zone, but not over the course of the year. They had a lot of turnovers early, and then when that went away in the last four games, guess what? Their defense wasn't very good. So, you know, that starts with the defensive line in today's NFL. I think you like roughly what you've got at linebacker. I mean, maybe you're going to make a change with KJ Wright, but you generally like your linebacking core. You do need probably another corner and a safety, but it all starts with your defensive line, because that can make the other levels of your defense significantly better.
The Houston or Major League Baseball didn't find any specific evidence of the Astros wearing buzzers, but boy howdy did.
Right.
And now
did you hear him yesterday just kept saying, got him.
Did you see that?
Is he the only one to have found all that? Because I've seen a lot of people on the internet.
Pictures are all over, but I'm going to give Howdy credit.
Did it start with Howdy?
Major League Baseball players are passing around his tweet.
Really?
What? Yes. Yeah, who's passing it around?
Tommy Pham shared his specific tweet.
Howdy's famous.
Good for Howdy.
Starting Nine, like the Barstool.
Does Howdy know this?
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure he'll tell us about it the minute we walk in.
His tweet had 700,000 impressions this
morning. I saw that he was actually unable to go through the door this morning because of his gigantic head just beating with his heart. It sure doesn't look good. I don't know why. The buzzer thing is worse than everything we've heard so far. And Danny was asking about this last night, just saying, well, why is it worse? We already knew they were cheating. We already knew they had a system that was elaborate. They were tape recording. I don't know why. It's hard for me to put
a
finger.
It's the same thing as having a video for something that we already know happened.
Yes.
You just get that much more. You can picture in your head what that looks like. It's like, God.
It's a more.
Well, and the banging on garbage can feels more rudimentary.
Yes.
So it's like,
right.
Okay, this is advanced cheating, more advanced cheating.
This feels awful. The idea that you're sitting in the batter's box and you're getting a pulse or something, a buzz on your chest.
That's
like
further than cheating is ever
or something.
All I can imagine is Bill Murray at the beginning of Ghostbusters. But it's just for some reason. That's unconscionable to me. And you've heard me. I don't get too bent out of shape about too many of these things. For some reason, once you go to that's where you've
lost. Yeah, because the other day you were like, oh, I don't know. We'll see what happens. I'm sorry, they have a buzzer.
Garbage cans and banging, that feels not that different from giving signals. Right? You're giving
it's rudimentary.
Well, with the exception that you're getting it from a live video stream.
And that part is wrong. Don't get me wrong. But looking out into, you see the book.
You're looking at Morse, step two here.
But it's like Morse code instead of FaceTime. Like, that's the difference in when you say rudimentary, banging on garbage cans is Morse code in World War II.
Yeah, if Morse code was someone telling you the answers for a test.
All right,
and then
I know that, but you're still communicating through Morse code. Imagine if you were cheating on a test and you had all the answers ahead.
I've never cheated on a test.
Well,
so
I have. I've cheated on many of them.
I've never in my life.
When you cheat on a test and you do it through rudimentary kind of creative fashion, you're like, okay, well, I got to give them props. What they did was kind of interesting. When you're cheating on a test because you're wearing an earpiece and somebody's just telling you the answer to every question, you're like, yeah, you didn't put in any effort.
Nothing's getting lost in translation when the buzzer's on.
You're cheating at cheating.
For a Major League Baseball player, you're guaranteeing success at a so much higher a rate than everybody else. I mean, can you imagine like watching Jose Altuve at the plate and just like in Ghostbusters, like the gum flies out of the guy's mouth. Like, ah!
Don't do it in the rain. You can only do it at home under the dome because if it rains, all of a sudden you electrocute a baseball player.
Now, I want to ask this question real quick. I asked Stacey and Tom yesterday, do you think this warrants a ban for any player?
I think they got to really talk about it. Yes, you got to really consider it. And I'll just say this. We say this all the time with steroids. Anytime there is a player who is doing something that seems impossible, it probably is. No, Barry Bonds cannot do what he did. No, you can't hit 500 home runs at age 40. No, Peyton Manning doesn't just automatically heal from his neck injury into his 40s.
Hey.
Those things just don't happen. Guys aren't superhuman. There is almost always an explanation that involves cheating.
All right, that's Mike Salk with us, by the way. This hour of Tom, Jake, and Stacey brought to you by Car Toys. Up next, we're going to talk about Major League Baseball and whether or not we can ever believe them again. That's next, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Rost.
We were talking a minute ago with Mike Salk about this sign-stealing thing, and if you've been listening to our show all week long, I think you've gotten the impression, at least from the three of us, that we're on the same page as far as how immoral we all find this to be. There's not one of us, between the three of us, nobody is defending the Astros for what they did or trying to downplay it, are we?
Maybe some Astros fan
general. No, just us.
Oh, us? No, I don't think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just trying to catch everybody up on at least where we stand, because we've been talking about this for about a week now, but it seems like every day there's a new development in it. Of course, the Astros accused of sign stealing through all kinds of means, use of technology, etc. But what we learned today is that Major League Baseball, when they did their investigation and then concluded it, they didn't find any evidence of the use of buzzers, which is kind of what came out yesterday. They had this elaborate system where the batter would wear a wire, some kind of electrode on his body, and it would it would buzz him once, twice, three times, whatever it had to be.
A lady.
So that he would know what pitch was coming. Look, if that's true, and Major League Baseball says they didn't unearth that in their investigation, they're either incompetent or they're lying. Both of which is not good.
I think what they've done in this situation, again, I will not be satisfied. I will not be satisfied until they do a new open investigation while all of this is out, all this is in the air. Because to me, at that point in time, when they conducted that investigation, it wasn't something we heard about.
Right.
Yeah. This was an internal investigation to where I don't even know how hard they were really trying to find something.
But it was a report, right?
They found one, yes. After this has come out, and they've asked, has Major League Baseball done an investigation? Rob Manfred and MLB said, well, yeah, actually, we did do this at one point. And to me, I look at it and say, yeah, but you're still protecting your players. You're still trying to gloss over this situation. And as we talked about before, and this automatically gets Tom Wassel's blood boiling,
uh-oh,
is Major League Baseball, instead of finding and getting down to the root of the problem and getting it all out in the air and cleaning it for good, you're just trying to isolate the issues and you're trying to get over it as soon as humanly possible. And I really think that's what Major League Baseball is trying to do. And you've got to reopen this investigation while everybody is paying attention to this.
Well, they are investigating the Boston Red Sox. So I guess my hope there is that, because the guy who's responsible for a lot of this, Alex Cora, who's already been fired by the Red Sox, he's the link between both teams. So my hope is that as they investigate the Red Sox, they'll unearth something about the Astros, when they go ahead and do that. Then they can go back and say, oh, well, while we were investigating the Red Sox, we learned that you were doing this in 2017 with the Astros, and then it'll all kind of come together.
I mean, wait for people to scream about Double Jeopardy, even though it's completely not applicable here. What, it's just something I'm looking forward to.
Because we're not in a court of law?
Yeah.
Because somebody's going to say,
Double Jeopardy! You didn't find us guilty of the buzzers.
Let me tell you, actually, Jake, I'll tell you one thing that did get my blood boiling a little bit. Keith Olbermann, who's a big, big tradition of baseball guy, as am I, by the way. He says, you'll notice, okay, by the way, I should back up for a second. Jack McDowell, who was a pitcher for the White Sox in the 80s and 90s, has now accused Tony La Russa of having a sign-stealing scheme with the White Sox in the 80s. Just keep that in mind. Keith Olbermann, responding to that on Twitter, he says, you'll notice he says, we had a sign-stealing system in the late 80s. He was with the White Sox from 87. He's also implicating the late Jim Fregosi. Frankly, there were electronic sign-stealing allegations about the Comiskey scoreboard when I was a kid in the 60s. My response to that, if you're trying to unearth ancient sign-stealing schemes to make it seem like the Astros aren't that bad, it's not going to work. The Red Sox were warned about Apple Watches. This is a new era. Everyone knew this was wrong, and they still did it.
Completely agree. The point is
Absolutely.
That when you unearth cheating rumors from back in the day, the point is that that might have been something people weren't thinking of at the moment. You were told not to do this, and you were doing it at a time when you knew it was wrong, when it was explicitly stated not to do it, and you did it anyways. There's a different context there.
Bottom line. I mean, look, it's 2020. We live in different times. There's a lot about our culture that has shifted, not just in the last 20 years, but even just 10 years.
Yeah.
Things you can't say, do, whatever. This is what we've got going on. In baseball, it's a new era. They were warned. The Red Sox were. It's not like the Astros can claim, oh, we didn't notice that. Right? The whole thing with the Apple Watches. And they went ahead. They did it anyway. They knew it was wrong. Shame on them.
There's no room. There's no debate for right or wrong in this situation because of those things that transpired. I got to ask you this. As all of this is going down, and we've talked about it, that it's a bummer for baseball. It's disappointing to hear about the Astros and specifically that like players linked to it, Jose Altuve, who's been a massive inspiration to it all. Is it in the least bit entertaining to follow what's been going on.
Oh, like absolutely. Jeff, like
Jeff Passan, 1,000%. Jeff Passan writes an article, and it, in bold letters, it says, baseball lost its mind.
Do you know how much Bravo Tom and I collectively watch? We love this. I love reality TV. And also, not only that, did you see this tweet that was going around with the like the Mean Girls moment? It's all chaos. It's screaming and yelling, and everyone's looking around, and everyone's guilty of everything. And it is the most attention baseball has gotten since the World Series.
That's what's really sad about
it. I know
this.
It is, but it's true.
And you know what? It goes even further because we read the tweets yesterday to you from Scott Brosius' son, who has accused Mike Trout of doing HGH. Now, I haven't really spent a lot of time thinking about that, but if I put that scandal, that potential scandal, on one side, and I put this scandal on the other, which one is worse? I mean, if Mike Trout, the league's best player, a guy who's setting records left and right, gets busted for HGH?
But not only that, but the accusation is shocking itself because he's not saying that Mike Trout is trying to hide it.
Yeah,
he's saying that it's for a he's saying that there is a loophole in the rule that you can take HGH if you have a certain condition. I think it's a thyroid condition in which he's throwing out there.
Nobody cares about that.
That's my point. Is he's openly doing it, and the league knows he's doing it. That's what would be far and wide absolutely bonkers to me in that story.
You know, these sports all manage to get over their foibles, but like you said, it's interesting. We got a wacky game show next, 710 ESPN Seattle.